Hello, friends. This is Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting live from KKNW on 1150 AM here in Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle in the United States. But actually today, I'm broadcasting live from beautiful Costa Rica. I've been down here giving presentations, and one of the things I really like about Costa Rica is they have completely abolished the military. They did that in 1948. Today, they devote 25% of their GDP to education and another 25% or more of their land to beautiful national parks. Costa Rica is a democracy in Latin America with a very high standard of living, and I'm so happy to be here today. And I want to thank Eladio and Joanna Chabaja for letting me stay and broadcast from their beautiful home here in Coronado in Costa Rica. We will also be talking about Costa Rica and what it's like to live in a country without a military on the second hour of today's program. And as they say here in Costa Rica, pura vida or pure life. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place. And I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this earth a much better place. So from 2 to 3 p.m. today, I'll be interviewing Helene Young, a sister of Peace Pilgrim, and Richard Palese, a close friend of Peace Pilgrim. A little bit of background, from 1953 to 1981, a silver-haired woman calling herself only Peace Pilgrim walked more than 25,000 miles on an incredible personal pilgrimage for peace. Helene Young is her 102-year-old sister, and on May 7, 2017, in Asbury Park, New Jersey, she received the New Jersey Hall of Fame Award on behalf of her sister, Peace Program. Richard Palese is a book publisher in Santa Fe, New Mexico. He's a wonderful man and also a lifelong friend of Peace Pilgrim through the years of her 28-year-old pilgrimage, 25,000 miles on foot for peace. These interviews should contain many inspiring messages on how we can make this world a much better and harmonious place. During the second hour from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m., I'll be interviewing Veronica Sheehan. Veronica is the director of the Sustainability Demonstration Center in Guasimal, Costa Rica. She'll be talking about environmental issues, as well as what it's been like to live in a country which abolished its military in 1948. I had planned to have a government official on, the director of intelligence services for Costa Rica, on to talk about these issues during the second hour, but he was busy in a meeting, couldn't come on, but I'm so happy Veronica could come on today. I want to thank everyone so much for support of this radio program, because Out of This World Radio is a nonprofit program supported entirely by donations. And for those who'd like to donate, please go to the donate button at the upper right-hand corner of the program webpage at www.outofthisworld1150.com and just click on it. I really appreciate your help and support, because I know all of us working together can create a much better and happier world. I also have a spiritual mentoring program where I can teach people how to contact their angels and spirit guides. If you'd like to learn how to get in touch with your loved ones who passed on, or contact your guides and get some good spiritual advice, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, or you can call me in the United States on my cell at 509-750-9793, or toll free at 1-888-879-8339 in the United States and Canada. With that, I'd like to introduce all of my listeners to Helene Young and Richard Palese. First off, I'd like to go to Richard first. Richard, hi, how are you doing today?
Good morning, Ted, and good morning to Out of This World Radio and the listeners on KANW there in Seattle.
Wonderful. I'm so glad.
I look forward to sharing a little bit of my experience with Peace Pilgrim. Yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, a little bit about Peace Pilgrim. From 1953 to 1981, she walked more than 25,000 miles on a personal pilgrimage for peace. She vowed to, quote, remain a wanderer until mankind has learned the way of peace, walking until given shelter and fasting until given food. In the course of her 28-year pilgrimage, she touched the hearts, minds, and lives of thousands of individuals across North America, including Canada and parts of Mexico, and her message was simple and profound, and it continues to inspire people from all over the world. For more information, please see her website at peacepilgrim.org. Richard is a wonderful man. He's a book publisher in Santa Fe, New Mexico. He's been a very public peace advocate for many years and was a conscious objector during the Vietnam War. He first encountered Peace Pilgrim in Santa Fe, New Mexico in 1966 when working as a newspaper reporter, and he then began a long-time correspondence, and she stayed at his home twice when walking through New Mexico. After she died, The memorial for her was at his house, and people who met her came from many places sharing her experience with Peace Pilgrim. And for that, I'm so happy to have you on today. You led in December 1981, your friendship with her led to the creation and publishing of Peace Pilgrim, her life and work in her own words in at least 7 different languages. And you've done a lot of peace walking too, since in 1986 you walked with the Great Peace March for Nuclear Disarmament across the USA. But anyway, with that, Richard, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Certainly, and thank you for giving that background on my relationship with peace.
My pleasure, my pleasure. One of the things that I discussed with Helene earlier today is that I told her I thought that her message of peace was needed more than ever today. Of course, back in 53 when she started, that was the course of the middle of the Korean War, and we've had lots of wars since that time. And I often what they've accomplished, you know. But I think her message of peace is just as important today as it was back in the 1950s.
Oh, I agree. I agree. I'm so direct. Is my voice coming through okay?
Yeah, it's a little choppy, but it's fine, Richard. Okay. Keep talking. Yeah, it's fine. Mm-hmm. Well, what kinds of things would you do now if you were the king of the planet, Richard? What would you do?
You mean besides what I'm doing?
Yeah, besides what you're doing now.
Well,
yeah, what would you do?
Right now, who's pretending to be king of the planet, but he lives a little ways east of here.
He lives what, Richard? I'm sorry?
I would have... there's one person who imagines he's the king of the planet, but he doesn't live here. He lives a little over on the other coast.
Okay, all
that's
right.
That's my humor. But what I really want to say is that a lot of what Peace Pilgrim taught, and it's what I share with other people, is her message, overcome evil with good and falsehood with truth and hatred with love. And that was her very straightforward message. And she said, you know, there's nothing really new about it except the practice of it. Mm. Except the practice of that. And she says, you know, the golden rule would do as well, but it's the practice of it. The wonderful thing about peace is you could see her living that belief every moment of every day. Yes. And I saw that. And
beautiful.
Other people did, too. And they were struck remarkably by her. And that she... when I wrote that story, the headline on the story says, she walks this world alone, but she walks with the saints. And at the time, I really didn't even know if I believed in saints, but it became really clear that, my goodness, there's a person who truly lives the best of beliefs that a person can have. And so I had a sense, just a feeling that I was talking with a real saint. I don't know. I didn't know at that time whether I really believed in the authenticity of saints per se, but it struck me, and it struck a number of other people, that this woman was for real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, it must have been really difficult when she first started, because according to her book, she went to some sort of Rose Bowl parade or a big sports event in Los Angeles in 1953.
Yes. She decided to start on January 1st, 1953, along the Rose Bowl parade on January. This is always January 1st, so that's when she started and where she started. And she didn't walk in the parade, but she walked on the sidewalk because she did want exposure to the reporters there from the Los Angeles Times and so on. And indeed, the next day, her picture turned up in the L.A. Times, and with her explaining a bit about her intention to walk across the country for peace. Mm-hmm. So she actually had a good relationship with the media all across the country.
Uh-huh. Well, that's wonderful, you know, and I'm so glad the media got her message out. I know that... Helene talked about, we'll play Helene's interview here in a few minutes, but Helene talked about her walking across Arizona. And of course, back then, there was a fear of communists, and she was arrested by the police, and they asked her whether she was a communist. And after they cleared her, it was a different time back then.
I don't remember that one specifically, but she was taken under police custody for being a vagrant, which of course, you know, she had no money on her. But she always considered being in jail for a couple of days was a great opportunity. They put her in, the women's part of the jail or the prison, and this gave her a captive audience for her message of peace.
That's true. They really couldn't run away. They had to listen to her. That's true.
Yeah, that's right.
That's funny. That's really funny. Well, Richard, I hope you don't mind. You know, as on all my radio shows, I always try to fit a lot in. I have an interview that I recorded this morning with Helene, her wonderful sister, in New Jersey, and I'd like to play that now. And if you don't mind, just please listen.
Certainly, I'll listen to Helene anytime. You know, I saw her earlier last month. In Egg Harbor City, where she lives and where Peace Pilgrim was born. And, you know, Helene is 102. You may have mentioned that earlier.
I know. And it was pretty amazing to talking to her this morning. And she was actually more awake than I was. It was 5 o'clock when I was talking to her. So it was really, really, really pretty funny. But with that, Richard... Please hold on. I'll play this interview now.
I'll stand by. Yeah.
Okay, here we go. This is an interview that I had with
Helene Young. She's Peace Pilgrim's sister. She's 102 years old. I did it this morning very early in the morning. It was like 5 o'clock in the morning my time. But I hope Helene came right through great on the interview. I hope you can understand me okay. Here it goes.
I'm 102. I'm the last be around who would know about her childhood, and I would be glad to share that with you, or whatever you would like to know that I could help you with.
Oh, I would love to. I would love to. She did so much beautiful work for the world in bringing the issue of peace to the planet and helping to create a peaceful planet, and I think that even now, more than ever, her message needs to be heard.
It really does.
And I want to thank you so much for coming on my show again today. I know you're busy and it's early in the morning there. What do you think was the pivotal point in your sister's life to make her work for peace?
Well, there are many factors that emerged to her life. I know that my father's death played a role in it because she felt bad that she had made a bad marriage and her husband was not, when he was drafted, he would not become a conscientious objector as she had hoped, and she wouldn't support him in the war, and so, of course, the sergeant said that was grounds for divorce, and so they were divorced. But, I mean, all these factors really played a role in why she would become Peace Pilgrim. I mean, she had gone to Philadelphia to live with her husband when he was working there, and there she became involved with the Jane Addams Peace House and became involved with the Quakers. And, of course, our family life contributed to it because we were a peaceful family. My father, when he married, he brought along with him three unmarried sisters and an unmarried brother. My mother was an angel. She accepted them. She left them raise her children while she did the hard work because she was strong. And because these three sisters loved children. And two of them said that they wanted nothing to do with men. If you saw a man look at you, you looked the other way. And so she just left them, raised her children because they showered us with love. And although we were never told we were loved or hugged or kissed, you know, we didn't need that. We knew we were. All our needs were met. And so we had our mothers. So the one sister that was rather more liberal had a big influence on Peace Pilgrim's life. And ironically, she was named for her. She was more liberal. She was the one who said if she had had the opportunity, she would have married. And so this was a big influence on Peace Pilgrim's life, too. And so, of course, the big turning factor in our lives was when my father, who was the backbone of the family financially, we were poor. We never knew it, but we were poor. And we were really turned upside down when my father was killed in an automobile accident. And he had been a contractor and builder. He had been a bank executive. He had been running for political office. And had all these things were lost because when he invested in an insurance company, and at that time they were burning houses down to collect the insurance money, he had mortgaged his home and everything, and we had a poultry business. That was how my father's sisters and brother made their living. We had raised all our own food, and we were living more or less a secluded life in a wooded area, and no neighbor within sight, but the nearest one a block away. So we lived a very isolated and secluded life. But when my father died, I mean, I was 21, Peace Pilgrim was 27, and my brother in between, three of us, we were left, my mother and the three aunts, the uncle had passed away, were all left penniless, thrown out of our home. We had no insurance. My father had no insurance. And so our life changed completely. And Peace Pilgrim was married then, and we were all had to take an apartment in the town. And Peace Pilgrim and I were supporting the family because we were both working. We had taken secretarial courses in high school because we couldn't have afforded college. And we were both working. And so we were supporting the family at that time. And we had no other income. So it was a very stressful time. And so then my Peace Pilgrim's husband was struggling to make a living, and he was getting into trouble writing bad checks, and this also preyed on Peace Pilgrim's mind because she was very close to her father, and she felt so bad that he was running for political office and had such a good name in the town where we lived, and then her husband was getting into trouble with the law because he couldn't make a living without writing bad checks. So that also, she felt very bad about that. And so there were many factors that caused her to become who she was. And one of them was she did not want children. She was not child-oriented. We were not close when we were small because when I reached the age of reason, she couldn't communicate me until I did. She was not child-oriented, had no maternal instinct, and this all played a part in her to becoming who she was. I mean, she could not have had a family and done what she did because she would have had obligations pray.
Helene, sorry to interrupt you, my friend. When you talk about the war, was that the Korean War? Is that right?
Korean War.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
She was up in Philadelphia when he was working there. She went to Philadelphia. She became involved with the Quakers in the Jane Addams Peace House, and she met Scott Nearing, who was one of the authors that we had read as children, when we were growing up. And she became affiliated with Scott Nearing and lobbied for him in Washington and became very active there in the peace movement. And she joined the hiking club, and she was their best hiker. And she couldn't find a woman to hike with her, so she hiked with men. All of this played a role in her becoming doing what she did. So she continued with them, and when she was divorced, she was free, and she knew she could hike, that she had done extensive hiking while she was in Philadelphia. She had become a wider Quaker member, and all of this because we had peaceful background as children. I mean, we never, with all the arguments and all the discussions we had, it was always done the Quaker way, with a friendly persuasion, and we never had animosity of any type in our home. So she had a peaceful upbringing, and we were taught all the principles of good living, but never, we were free thinkers. We were not affiliated with any religion. And at that time, you were always asked, what was your religion? We'd say, what are we? She'd say, they'd say, you're Unitarians. Mm-hmm. So, which is what I am now. And so, we had a peaceful childhood, and until my father's death, I mean, we were living poor but happy. And but my sister never felt comfortable with making money and spending it foolishly. When she was working, she always led a clean life. She did not participate in her friends' drinking and smoking and all. I mean, she always felt that she was spending money, making money and spending it foolishly, and it was not bringing meaning to her life. So we were out walking, and she asked me what I thought of her walking a pilgrimage for peace. And I said I thought it was an excellent way for her to meet people one-on-one to spread peace into the world. And so I became a peace activist and volunteered to help her any way I could. And so she knew she could do the walking, because she had walked. She was the first woman to have walked the Appalachian Trail in 1 year. And for that, she just got an award. And so they finally recognized her for that. And so she knew she could do the walking. She knew that you could survive if you just had liquids, and she knew how to find, would know how to find food along the way. So she set out to do this by name because so that the media would not focus on her personal life, but on her message. And of overcome evil, false, the truth, and hatred with love. And so she set out at the Rose Bowl parade, unknown, carrying only a comb and a toothbrush, and her petition, a pen, and her petitions for the end to the Korean War, a Department of Peace. And there was another one, I forget what it was.
Wow, that's amazing. Just a petition to the end of the Korean War and a toothbrush.
Yeah, so anyway, she started out unknown. And, of course, in those days, in the McCarthy era, they were looking for commies. And she was suspected and thrown into jail. In Arizona, but when they found she was clean, had no affiliation, the governor gave her a letter of clearance. But she would contact the media everywhere she went so that she could become known. And then she accepted hospitality and would engage in whatever speaking engagements they would set up for her, and she spoke anywhere she was asked, and you know, colleges and anywhere except where people had reached the age of reason, she could not relate to children. So she set out to become known. Contacting the media everywhere she went, and she was so. My husband has a scrapbook here that I'm looking at that he made of all of the publicity she had received, and all the letters she wrote to us, and she had the collection at the Swarthmore College. Sister, were should give it all up. She would accept no money. She said the truth should not be sold. And she would accept no money for any of her speaking engagements. She accepted only hospitality. And if she were not offered that, she would sleep by the roadside. And she carried with her two pieces of plastic to sleep on her. She would go sleep along the roadside, eat what she could find, like berries or deserted apple orchard or something.
Section of her book on Thoughts to Ponder, and she wrote, that's okay, that's all right, she wrote, there's no glimpse of the light without walking the path. You can't get it from anyone else, nor can you give it to anyone. Just take the steps which seem easiest to you, and as you take a few steps, it'll be easier for you to take a few more. And then she wrote, when you have constant communion with God, a constant receiving from within, there's never any doubt. You know your way. You become an instrument through which the job is done, and therefore you have no feeling of self-achievement. The spiritual life is the real life. All else is illusion and deception. Only those who are attached to God alone are truly free. Only those who live up to the highest light live in harmony. All those who act upon the highest motivations become a power for good. Know that every right thing you do, every good word you say, every positive thought you think has good effect. And I thought that's so beautiful in her book.
Well, she did a lot of studying of all these people, and I'm sure she was aware of all of their work for peace. But we never got to discuss it. In fact, I never got to discuss anything with her. When she came here, she would come here anonymously because her mother's family, whom she lived, her sister and brother, did not approve of her doing this. They thought she should be doing what a normal woman does, you know, and they did not understand her mission. So she was all of us came here anonymously, and when she came here, the first thing she asked for would be a typewriter to answer her mail. She'd sit down here and write, answer her mail all day and come just at mealtime. And incidentally, that was one of the changes she made in life. She would not eat anything that she couldn't kill. And so she was a vegetarian. And I never, ever got a chance to ask her all the questions that I wanted to ask about her pilgrimage. And thought that she was going to run retreats after her seventh crossing. She was going to go first to Pennsylvania and take she had already taken retreats to Alaska and Hawaii. With friends in California, but she was going to start in Pennsylvania here in the East, and I had intended to take off from work and join her in that, and to learn more about her life and her pilgrimage, which I never got a chance to ask.
Well, you know, her message was so powerful, and it's amazing. I think she was helped. She must have had the help of God and angels helping her on all of her walks across the United States and Canada, Mexico.
Well, I mean, as far as religion is concerned, we were raised as free thinkers, and we were told that we were Unitarians. And that's what I am now. And so we never had a church affiliation. And she wrote a poem called I Am What Men Call God. And to that, she wrote music. And I play that every day on the piano in her memory. We were not raised. Unitarians believe that we do not know, and that's my feeling, that we don't know. We're seekers.
Sure.
And but some people need the comfort of thinking they have a better life. I mean, we had a good life, and people who have had a miserable life are hoping for something better in the future.
Sure.
And they need religion. And so, I accept everyone. There have been many religions in my family. I mean, my daughter chose to be a Christian, a Protestant, and she married a Catholic and divorced him and married a Jew. And you know, we always got along.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was never any animosity. I mean, I had a wonderful marriage where I never had a cross word for my husband for 16 years. I mean, we just lived a peaceful life.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand that many people need to feel that there's something better in the future for them.
That's an amazing interview, and Richard and all my listeners around the world, I've got just a little bit more to play. It's just a 3-minute segment about, she talks about the way of peace, and then we'll come right back to you, Richard. Thank you so much for being patient. We'll play this little segment here. It'll only take a few minutes, because I often get a lot of people asking me, how do you create peace in the world? And I think she answers it with her next just a few minutes here. I'll drive it. I'll bring it up to the section where it is. Here it is here. Okay, please hold on. Here it is here.
What's called the way of peace. And I just want to read the just a couple of sentences, Helen. This is the way of peace. Overcome evil with good, falsehood with truth, and hatred with love. And she wrote, the world is feverishly working to build things of war. The world is preparing the destruction of a kind unknown before. I hear much a cursing of enemies and arguments increase. But oh, the world is longing, is yearning, is praying for peace.
What a beautiful, beautiful poem.
Yes, she was busy writing poetry. I mean, she was. She had a wonderful memory. I mean, she would never forget our birthdays. She would write a poem or write something inspirational for our birthdays.
Wonderful, wonderful. When she was walking all those miles across the United States, Canada, and parts of Mexico, Helen, were there any supernatural events that happened along her walks?
Well, she did say she had one. I mean, it's in the book about when she was caught in a snowstorm. And she was walking through the snow and lost her way and she did have a vision of someone coming to her and she thought this was this aunt, I think. But she said that then she was told to go back, and at that point she stumbled onto a packing box under a railroad bridge.
That's beautiful. I know that she must have been protected by angels in her many walks across the country.
So anyway, I mean, she was a survivor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she had, I'm sure, many incidents
I hope you've enjoyed that interview. It was incredible talking to her for that long a time. And Richard, are you there? Still there, my friend?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, good, yes, good. I'd love your comments on that. I know that's a lot to digest, but
anyway, I'd love your comments on what she had to say.
Oh yes, I think she covered a great deal and did it very well. There's a couple of things I would like to add about peace, if I might.
Yes, please.
Okay. She wore a blue tunic over a navy blue black shirt, and those were her clothes. That was it. And
wow.
She didn't have a change of clothes. Occasionally the tunic was interesting because it had pockets, for carrying her worldly possessions. Her, her pen, her notebook, or not a notebook, but map sometimes. And
sure.
A toothbrush and a comb, yes.
Wow.
And she would show these when she would talk to groups. That tunic said it changed from time to time, but on the front it always just said "Peace Pilgrim" in white letters. And sometimes it said "Walking 25,000 miles up for peace" on the back, and sometimes it would change, like "Walking for Disarmament" and so on. When she would have a new one made. But she let them wear very well. There were little holes here and there. And she would often say, no, I don't need another, like a pair of shoes. Her shoes were just simple tennis shoes, blue tennis shoes. And I once told her, oh, my goodness, look at the holes in those. Let me buy a new pair, she said. And she'd say, no, there are quite a few thousand miles left on these. I also wanted to say something about the nonprofit. After she died, a few of us formed a nonprofit based on her principles. And Peace Pilgrim did not accept money, and neither does the nonprofit. At least we let people know what things might cost. But everything that we offer is at no cost. You can write or email, peacepilgrim.com. And the book, there's also a documentary called Peace Pilgrim, an American Sage Who Walked Her Talk. It's a 60-minute production. These things in a little booklet that she had printed by some people from time to time called Steps Towards Inner Peace. And that is also available at no cost. So again, just write to you can write to Peace Pilgrim at or just write to peacepilgrim.com, and that will do it. And someone in our little nonprofit will send you those items.
Well, you know, Richard, I think you, Peace Pilgrim, her sister Helene, and everyone who knows about Peace Program and continues to work are all angels. And one of the I don't know if you do you know Mary Neuschwanger in Costa Rica?
Yes, and you are there now. Yes.
Yeah, she's here, and she'd just like to say just a few words about, if that's okay, just for a minute or two.
I know you have very little time left there on the show, but there's one little meditation of pieces that I'd like to share. But if you want to talk to Mary first, that's okay with me, of course.
Yeah, just for a minute.
Hi, Mary.
Hi, Richard. I was so happy to meet you in Santa Fe a year or so ago. It was such an honor since you had known Peace Pilgrim personally. I never met her, but she's certainly impacted my life. And this is her example, living her life as a prayer for peace, having found peace, and living to show people that peace is possible in an individual life, as well as in the life of society and countries and in our group relations. Such an important thing for us to see, a person who has found inner peace and what that looks like, the joy, the health, the well-being, the love that she extended everywhere she went. So I'm glad to have had a part in this, even though I didn't know her in life. I was so glad to meet her sister, who was 86 years old when she came to peace to Costa Rica in 2000, when we dedicated a life-size bronze statue of Peace Pilgrim walking on the grounds of the United Nations University for Peace. And now she's 102 years old, and she's a beautiful example also. She didn't start exercising until she was 69 years old, and then she was pretty much riding her bicycle 10 miles a day until she was 100, over 100. So I'm thrilled that to know Helene, though I didn't know Peace Pilgrim as you did. And she's been a blessing in our family life for our children to know.
Thank you so much, Mary. Go ahead, Richard. You had a meditation prayer for peace?
A meditation that Peace Pilgrim would share with people from time to time. Now, you know that she did not have a religious upbringing at all. She got to know a little about it after she was talked in several churches. At any rate, so she thought of thinks of God as more or less like the Christ within. So here's the meditation. Peace, be still, and know that I am God. And then, peace, be still, and know that I am. Peace, be still, and know. And then peace, be still. Peace be. Peace.
Beautiful. That is so beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Certainly.
That is so beautiful.
Yes. Go ahead.
I have happened to have with me Michiko Hayashi. She's the director of the Emoto Peace Project. Of course, Dr. Emoto was a wonderful man as well.
Yeah.
And she has a little, she'd like to hit this, it's a 528 hertz love tuning fork that'll send love around the world. I'd like to have her play it quickly, and then we'll finish it up with your interview.
All right. Carry on.
Thank you so much, Michiko. Richard, that was a 528 tuning fork. That's the frequency of love. She said it with a beautiful healing crystal. But we've got about 2 or 3 minutes left, and I'd love to give you the rest of the time, Richard, to wrap up your wonderful interview today.
Well, thank you, Ted. You know, Peace did not encourage disciples walking with her at all. She encouraged people to take their own path. When people would start, starting to walk with her, Peace's pace was very quick, so she never had people following her more than either a few hours or a couple of days on the road. Most of the time, she was entirely alone. She wore no hat, just the clothes on her back and a few things in her pocket. That was who she was for close to 28 years.
Wow. That's amazing. And she didn't worry about getting food or shelter. It would just, people would help her along the way?
Yes. Sometimes she would let her a need be known, but she would never ask. Like, and she would never accept money. I think I've told you that.
Right. Wow.
But, yes, and it's interesting how here's a woman walking alone. Wait a minute, walking alone across America? Big
right.
towns and small, wide open spaces? Yes. This is what she did. And she, of course, felt she was completely protected all the way. The first challenges to her came in her first crossing. And she felt that these were challenges and that she met them. You know, there was a guy in a truck, and he invited her to come in and sleep in the truck, and she did. And then she, when she awakened, she saw him crying, and she said, "Why are you crying?" He said, "You know, when I invited you in my truck, I had something that was no good in mind." So even a potential attack like that, he said, "When I saw you sleeping so peacefully, I could not touch you."
Well, that's
yeah,
beautiful.
Right. And she had several stories like that are of her challenges, but that was only during that first crossing of America. When she got to New York, and she sat down and rested in the Grand Central Station, and by herself, she was there. And while she was there, a voice seemed to come to her. At least this was she told several of us, and the voice said, "You are my daughter, in whom I am well pleased." My goodness.
Wow, that is so beautiful. That is so beautiful. We've got about 45 seconds left, Richard, and I want to thank you so much for coming on today. And I want to give you another 30 seconds to please wrap up your beautiful interview.
Well, there's so many things to talk about there. You know, I got to know the people that were outside of their home when that accident happened near Knox, Indiana, and Terry and Tony Bow, and of course they realized that, wait a minute, we played an important part here. These pilgrims actually died in Terry Bow's arms, there in the car. So she was not dead on impact, although her driver was.
Wow.
And of course it was not a careless accident. There's a narrow bridge there, and it's really easy to have an accident.